Hello and welcome to the More Life podcast. I'm Dr. Sophie Edwards, a health psychologist and clinical lead at More Life. I specialise in disordered eating patterns and am passionate about the link between psychological and physical health. Join me and my colleagues as we discuss a range of topics related to health and well-being. Today I'm joined by Sarah Knapp, one of our adult weight management practitioners. Sarah's been working for More Life for the last year, running adult weight management groups at our Bedfordshire contract. Prior to this, she worked in mental health services, delivering psychological interventions to support people on their journey to recovery. Sarah has a keen interest in mindfulness, which is what we'll be discussing today, including what mindfulness actually is, the different types of mindfulness practice, and how we can incorporate them into our daily lives. We're going to discuss the benefits of mindfulness and what the research says on its effectiveness. Sarah's going to give you some tips on how to start a mindfulness practice if you're a beginner. We're also going to touch on mindful eating and how that can help you get a better relationship with food. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for joining me today, Sarah. I'm really excited to talk a bit more about mindfulness. And I'm sure lots of people listening will have heard the term mindfulness, things like mindful eating, mindful meditation. It's thrown around quite a lot. But how would you describe mindfulness?
So mindfulness is about being in the present moment. There's so many things that we do in our day-to-day lives that we just do on autopilot. So we don't always kind of truly notice what's actually happening in that moment because our mind just very easily wanders off all the time. And this is very natural, like the mind does wander. It's just a part of our human experience. So when practicing mindfulness, it's about noticing when the mind has wandered and then just bringing it back to the here and now. And there's different ways in which you can do that. So quite often it will be about having a focus of attention. So a lot of people might start off by focusing on their breathing. Some people might have a mantra or like a word that they might focus on. So it could be something neutral like calm or peace. Some people might focus on the physical sensations that they feel in their body. But like I said, it's just about bringing the mind back when you notice that it has gone off to sort of think about things that are going to happen in the future or things that have happened in the past. And that can happen a number of times when you're practicing. So it could happen 10 times, 100 times, even 1,000 times. But like I said, it is just completely natural. So it's just kind of bringing ourselves back into that present moment. And it is a skill, so it does take practice, and it is something that can be developed over time. So it's just important to kind of keep practicing and repeating it until it starts to become more of an automatic behaviour.
Okay, and what ways, how would you practice that? How would you develop that skill?
So for me, I found it easy to just start off quite slowly. So I started by kind of taking a few minutes in the day where I could use that time to be mindful and just kind of keep doing that every day and just kind of building it up slowly. So once I became sort of more familiar with doing a few minutes a day, I then felt more comfortable to kind of lengthen that time that I'd be mindful, maybe doing 10 minutes a day. But we're all human as well, so wouldn't necessarily achieve that all the time, but it is just about continuing to sort of kind of build it up into your own practice. And what I've managed to do now is actually kind of look at my day and see where I can actually fit it in as like a part of my routine. So I started to actually just set my alarm a little bit earlier in the morning to give myself that time where I could practice it every day, where I knew that I wouldn't be disturbed, I knew that I wouldn't be in a rush, And that would be the time for me to practice mindfulness. So it'll be different for everybody. It doesn't really matter when in the day you practice, but it's just about trying to kind of, like I said, start off small and then build it up to kind of fit into your day. So I do try to practice every day where I can. And as well as doing those kind of formal types of practice, I also try to be mindful when I'm doing sort of routine activities, things like brushing my teeth or eating a meal or doing gardening. Those are quite sort of typical activities where you notice that the mind wanders off a lot. So I try to at those times also kind of bring my attention to what I'm actually doing. And again, it's not an easy task, so it doesn't mean that I'm able to do that every single time, but it's just kind of having that awareness and being more in the moment when you can.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I did a mindfulness course years ago, and one of the bits of homework I had was to pick a task that was automatic, and cleaning the teeth is often used, and doing that mindfully. But you were saying, you know, the more formal mindfulness in your practice, is that meditation that you're talking about there?
Yeah, so I do kind of have a set period of time where I will actually just sit down and I will kind of perhaps choose a practice, as I mentioned earlier, kind of finding something to focus my attention on. So if, for example, it's my breathing, I'll kind of maybe sit for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and just really pay attention to the inhalation and exhalation, kind of just observing what's happening, what I'm noticing, how I'm feeling. And if my mind was to wander off and think about something else, as soon as I notice that that's what's happening, I then just bring my attention back to the breathing again. So yeah, that's kind of a more formal way of doing it, by really setting aside a time and sort of sitting down and having a clear kind of focus that you're kind of thinking about.
Brilliant. And so I want to talk a bit about the benefits of mindfulness, but for you, how have you benefited from your mindfulness practice?
So yeah, I think there's been quite a few benefits from me that I have noticed. What I'd probably say is that it's not something that you'd perhaps notice improvements in like straight away. It does take time for these things to come along. And also I probably, because what I've noticed has kind of come on gradually. Actually, when thinking about this question, it helped me to actually realise how things have changed a little bit for me. So what I've noticed is that it does help me to focus much better, because practicing mindfulness is kind of about sort of not rushing, really just kind of slowing down. So that really helps me to kind of think about, you know, all aspects of my life, to really just focus on trying to do one thing at a time, really, so that I can actually be more efficient in what I'm doing. And also, I think it really helps me to kind of just take a step back, especially if I'm quite caught up in, you know, feeling quite stressed out, or if I'm kind of, if I find myself in a difficult, really tough situation, rather than kind of, you know, reacting automatically to that, and just kind of reacting in response to my initial emotions, I actually kind of take a little bit of a step back and just observe what's happening, observe how I'm feeling, and see if I can sort of respond in a more helpful or a more effective way. So it has helped me to kind of bring a bit more of a calmer approach to, especially to stressful situations for me.
Brilliant. That's really interesting, because some of the things that you've found yourself have benefited are actually the ones that are backed by research as well. I think it's I think one of the things about mindfulness, obviously it has its roots in spirituality, Buddhism, and so there is a lot of texts out there describing its practice and, you know, how it helps find how people find enlightenment, and so many people have found benefits from it. But where it's being used now, you know, therapeutically to treat certain mental health conditions, obviously there's like a level of research that has to be done on it, and it's a bit of a strange scenario because it's something that is, as I say, based in spirituality, but we're trying to sort of apply Western medicine approaches to it, which can be a bit problematic. But obviously, if it's going to be recommended by people like the World Health Organization and be part of NICE guidance, which are the people who regulate the treatment we get, it has to be shown to be effective. And I was looking at some of the research on it, and it's hard to research it. Actually, as part of my doctorate training, I looked at mindfulness as a treatment option for people with HIV is what I looked at. And the way you look at when you're looking to see whether a treatment actually works, combining lots of different research studies together in something called either a meta-analysis or systematic review is the best way of doing it. And that's literally just fancy words for putting lots of studies together and seeing what the result was across them as a combined. And it's actually really hard with mindfulness to do because it takes so many forms. So some of the studies look at sort of a 4-week intensive mindfulness course, whereas some look at, you know, this 3-month intervention, and some look at 3-day retreats. So, and you can't compare those in one study. So there are some mindfulness interventions now that are standardized that can be combined. So you've probably heard of mindfulness-based stress reduction.
Yeah.
So that one was developed for particularly for pain and chronic stress-related health conditions. And it's quite interesting. So that's an eight to 10 week course. It involves a 1-day retreat on week 6. It teaches meditation, some yoga poses, and everyday mindfulness, like the things you were talking about. And it has been shown to reduce stress levels. So stress is one aspect that has been shown to be improved with mindfulness, but also pain. Pain management. And I find it fascinating because mindfulness won't get rid of pain, but it seems to help people's psychological reaction to pain and how they cope with pain. And so it helps people experience pain as a, you know, it is a physical sensation, but not letting it sort of interfere with psychological processes, not having the same level of distress. And that in itself can reduce pain, because if you're thinking less about it, it actually has that impact. You're not ruminating on the pain. You're not focusing on that area of your body that's giving you pain. It actually then has a knock-on effect. So, yeah, pain was one area. And then there's mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which is based on the stress reduction one, and that's been shown to improve things like depression. And so that actually is recommended on the NHS now, and in certain areas you can access that for free if you've been diagnosed with depression, which is interesting. But then what I thought was, from what you said how it improves your focus. And that's one other area that's really been shown to be improved with mindfulness, and that's attention. So with people who have got impaired attention, which can be people who have got things like depression or anxiety, they find it hard to focus, but also with people with things like attention deficit disorder, mindfulness is being shown to help people be able to focus and sort of drown out that their thoughts about the future, thoughts about the past, and actually focus on what's in front of them in the moment, which is, pretty much what you said, how it helps you. So
Yeah, it's really interesting, those findings that you mentioned as well. And yeah, I can definitely see how it would be helpful for people who experience pain. I mean, I don't have long-term conditions, but I have noticed myself that if I've like last night I tripped over something and stubbed my toe, and initially I was just like, oh my God, that's really painful. But then I just kind of thought, right, I'm just going to focus on my breathing, just to kind of accept what's happened. And yeah, like the when you're able to actually just focus on something else, like you say, it's much easier to actually forget about that pain. So yeah, I can see how that's really helpful.
Yeah, and that's actually the one of the aspects. I have done mindfulness practices intermittently, I have to say. But one area that I used to get really bad migraines. I haven't had them for quite a while now, but when I was having a migraine, that was the one time I would really try and practice mindfulness. And I think for me, it didn't get rid of my migraine by any stretch of the imagination, but what it did allow me to do was stop the worrying that was on top of it. So quite often I'd be lying in bed, curtains shut, and as well as having this awful pain, I'd also be worrying about all the work I was supposed to be doing, and I'd be worrying about all the, oh, I was supposed to be going for dinner tonight, and now that's not, and all of that stuff on top of it. And it's actually described quite nicely, I think, in one of the Buddhist texts about pain and mindfulness. And it says that if you're pierced with a dart, that's the example they get, that if you're pierced with a dart, your mind will be full of worry and terror and upset about that. So you might as well have been pierced with two darts, one physical and one psychological. And it really resonated with me because that is exactly what it's like. You've got the physical pain and then the psychological pain on top of that. And so mindfulness kind of allowed me to detach from those thoughts. But then also, some of the physical pain as well from focusing on other areas. I remember I'd always used to open a window so I'd have a breeze in, and really focusing on the feeling of the breeze on my skin would just be take me away from that pain. So sorry, gone off on a bit of a tangent there, but
That's all
it's
right.
yeah, really interesting how it benefits people and
Yeah, definitely.
yeah, different ways. Yeah, so it would be really good to know what you'd recommend for people who are thinking, oh, this sounds really interesting. Maybe they have got things like pain issues or mental health issues that they think they might benefit from mindfulness. What kind of advice would you give them?
I definitely say, like, when starting off, it is really important to just kind of start out small and slowly. So, don't try and go kind of full pout and just think, right, I need to kind of do 20 minutes of mindfulness or something. When I talk to like friends and people about kind of my own mindfulness practice, I do quite often get a lot of people say to me, oh, I can't do that. My mind's just too busy. There's no way I could just, sit still for a long period of time. And that's very, very common for most people. I think we can all relate to that, the mind being busy, especially with our lives being so busy all the time. So yeah, by starting off kind of slowly, that's what can help you to kind of develop the skill and help you to kind of build on that. So even, as I said earlier, just finding kind of 3 minutes in your day, I'm sure even with our busy lives, most people could probably find 3 minutes in the day that they could take to just be a bit more mindful. Whether that's if you're going somewhere and you get there 5 minutes early, you could just sit in the car and try and be mindful for a few minutes. Or if you're just about to go on your lunch break, you could just spend the first 3 minutes of that bit just being mindful. So it's just finding that little small pocket in your day where you could just fit that in, and then once you start doing it a bit more regularly, it becomes much easier to build on. I think as well, when you first start off, it is more helpful to try to find conditions that are going to sort of help you. So having kind of a quiet space where you're not likely to be disturbed or distracted, so making sure your phone is perhaps out of sight, and you've got quite kind of a comfortable area that you can practice in. Also, just finding what works for you as well. So if you do find it difficult to actually be still or sit still, you can do mindful movement. So mindfulness doesn't just have to be about kind of being still all the time. You could, you know, do some mindful walking, or just notice kind of, again, still observing your experiences as you're moving. I also think that it's really important, I haven't really talked about this, but part of mindfulness as well is bringing this kind of non-judgmental approach to your practice. So it's about not evaluating how it's gone. So there's no sort of good or bad practice. You know, if your mind does wander 1,000 times when you're first starting out, that's fine. And that's perhaps where a lot of people start to give up and say, I can't do it. But actually, it is just about kind of taking that time, just trying to pay attention to the present moment and just bring some kind of compassion to that practice. And as I said, it does take time to develop. So, you know, it might feel like at the beginning, the mind is wandering so much all the time, but you'll start to perhaps notice that each time you practice, you start to notice more when the mind has wandered off. So yeah, just finding kind of, you know, what works for you, kind of what fits into your lifestyle. And there's a lot of resources out there that can really help as well. So I actually found it, I first started using an app called Headspace when I was practicing. So that can be really helpful in terms of having some guidance to listen to, so that you're able to just kind of focus on what that person is saying. Headspace is also quite helpful because it kind of gives you a reminder each day, so that having a reminder or some kind of a prompt to get you to take some time to be mindful can be really effective as well.
That's really good, and that's great advice. And I think what I'd add to that, I think it would don't jump straight into something if you're new to it. I think it's quite often you see a lot of advertising out there for these sort of 4-day silent mindfulness retreats, and I think that would be quite daunting for a newcomer, certainly.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to sort of know yourself a little bit as well, because there are some rare, much more rare than common, but some people do have some adverse effects from mindfulness practice that I've seen. So some people who have experienced trauma find that certain types of mindfulness work for them better than others, the more guided kind of practices rather than just the more open ones. So it's about learning about yourself, and I think if you are looking for mindfulness for a specific health condition, so for things like depression, I think it's really important to go through the right channels for that. And if you want to do it as a more formal course or formal treatment program, to make sure you're going either through your GP, because as I say, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy is available on the NHS in a lot of areas, or finding a qualified teacher who has the knowledge and skills to deal with that and to actually teach it correctly. So they're really important. And I think it's important as well that, as you said, you're not going to see those immediate effects. It's more of a cumulative thing, and it happens over a period of time. And that's what the research has said as well. It's not that you do a mindfulness practice, you might feel good afterwards. A lot of people do feel good and relaxed because they've taken that time. But, you know, especially for things like chronic stress, chronic pain, long-term depression, anxiety, it is going to take time. And I'd also say to be a bit aware of some of the claims that are made. And as I've said, there's a lot of research to say that mindfulness does have a good impact on a lot of these health conditions. But there's also a lot of false claims out there as well about the impact of it, or, you know, exaggerated headlines. I remember, seeing one a while ago now, but mindfulness better than antidepressants at treating depression. And, I think some studies have shown that there's similar outcomes. However, I think if you're reading things like that, always go to your GP. Do not stop any medication you're on and turn to mindfulness instead. And remember that everyone is different. What works for one might not necessarily work for another. So, be aware of all of those things and know that it's not a cure-all for everything out there.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And the only other thing I think I get asked a lot about is about mindful eating as well, which is an interesting concept and something that I've done a bit of work on, and I'm an intuitive eating counsellor as well, and a lot of that is about mindful eating. So I know you work as a weight management practitioner. Do you use mindful eating as part of your program?
Yeah, there is a session where we actually cover mindful eating. So we'll actually kind of discuss sort of the differences between sort of mindful eating or mindless eating. Mm-hmm. And that's when a lot of people start to realise that a lot of the time they do eat quite mindlessly. So it's only when you start to become kind of more aware of those sort of particular behaviours and perhaps the fact that you might be eating whilst doing a lot of things. Probably the most common one is kind of eating whilst watching TV. So your brain is trying to kind of do a few things at once. It's not actually able to, concentrate fully on that process of eating. So I do find that when we discuss mindful eating with clients, they do find that quite thought-provoking and start to become more aware of what they're doing when they're eating.
Yeah, and I think it can really help promote the people listening to their internal signals as well. So when you're watching the TV, you're not going to be necessarily aware of your hunger signals, your fullness signals. So it's really hard to know when you've had enough food and so overeating or eating. I don't really like the term overeating because it's quite judgmental, but eating past the point of comfortable fullness can happen quite often as a result, and we've all been there.
Yeah.
It's not nice. So over time as well, if you override those fullness signals for a period of time, you stop really noticing them at all, I've found with people. And so For me, mindful eating is a good way of connecting with that, but also connecting with hunger signals as well.
Because
I think people, especially people who are constantly on diets, they really don't trust their body to tell them when they're hungry, and try and ignore those hunger signals. And if we do that, it can, give rise to things like binge eating. And, it's such a common pattern, isn't it? Trying to avoid food all day and then being so exhausted by it all by the evening that you can binge eat and not be able to regulate that. So I find mindful eating is really good for things like that. And it has been shown, there is a formal mindful eating course. It's called Mindfulness-Based Eating Awareness Training, or MBE, which is really interesting. I actually did a course, not as a practitioner, but as a student, few years ago now, and it is a really interesting course, and it's a lot of practical mindful eating exercises, as well as teaching some of the meditation and daily mindfulness practices as well. So you end up eating different foods, and especially you kind of lead up to eating foods that are foods that you normally struggle to control the amount you eat, and it's a really different experience and trying to be non-judgmental as well, being non-judgmental about your food choices, about your body, about things like that. So it's a really interesting, it's And it has been shown in research to reduce things like emotional eating, because obviously the mindfulness practice itself helps teach people ways of coping with emotions and negative thoughts that are not food related. And also, yeah, reduces binging through listening to body signals. I think a lot of it is, eating more regularly. So that you're not, really hungry physically and psychologically at the end of the day. It's not associated with weight loss, I think I'd hasten to add, but its goal isn't weight loss either. So it wasn't
No.
designed as a weight loss treatment. However, for a lot of people who are seeking weight loss, some of the improvements they might see, reduction in binge eating, emotional eating, will help them, have a better relationship with food. So it's a really interesting part, and I think a really important part of healing people's relationship with food, or even, just having people who every day, even if you don't struggle with your weight, we often have a poor relationship with food generally because diets are promoted all the time. So yeah, it's another interesting an interesting thing to look at as well. And there's a great book called The Joy of Half a Cookie.
I've heard of that book, yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and that's about mindful eating. So I'd recommend that for anyone. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of resources out there. We can list some of these with the podcast, so people can practice more. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the whole topic?
No, I don't think so. It's been a really interesting discussion to have with you.
Oh yeah, no, it's been really interesting, and it's nice as well to get it from the perspective of someone who does practice mindfulness themselves, and getting your it's really interesting because we didn't rehearse this obviously, but hearing some of the benefits you found from it actually do match up with the research evidence is really interesting. So yeah, I think that's yeah, for anyone who is interested, I think what you said, Headspace is a really good app. I've also found Calm, that's another one that I've used. And there are lots of books out there, so for mindful eating, The Joy of Half a Cookie, I think it's by someone called Jean Christella, I think, but I'll put a link to that. So some really good starting places for people. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Just to recap, mindfulness has been defined as the intentional and non-judgmental focus of your attention on your emotions, thoughts, and sensation that are occurring in the present moment. You can practice mindfulness in different ways, via meditation, mindful movement like yoga, or by practicing everyday tasks, even things like brushing your teeth in a more aware and mindful way. There are lots of health claims made about mindfulness, and some of them haven't proved to be true yet. But we do know that it can be effective in reducing stress and anxiety, improving depression, and helping people manage their pain. On top of that, mindful eating has been shown to help people reduce binge eating and emotional eating, but on its own doesn't tend to lead to weight loss. If you'd like more support from us, then do give us a call or visit our website. If you're in Suffolk, it's www.onelifesuffolk.co.uk. If you're anywhere else in the country, it's www.more-life.co.uk. Make sure you tune into the next podcast, and we look forward to seeing you then. Look after yourselves and each other.